high short kick that is going to come up and bounce at the 20. Rutgers has a chance to recover it, and they do! What a play by the Scarlet Knights!
Get it to Harper with three, with two, with one. Harper for the win! Got it!
10 and 10 at the 21. Wimsett hands it off. It's Manunga getting to the corner left. 20, 15, catching to 10. Manunga down near the goal line. He is in! Touchdown, Rutgers!
Now with six. Baker making his move with five. Step back three for the lead. Oh. Yeah! With 1.1 to go.
Welcome to another episode of the Scarlet Faithful Podcast. I'm your host, David Anderson. For those of you listening on a podcast source, give us a good review. Helps other Rutgers fans find the show. Today, we're doing something very different. For all of you avid listeners of the show, you know that Aaron Brightman, I believe, has hosted every single other episode of the Scarlet Faithful Podcast. But we're going to reverse it a little bit today. So he's actually my guest. Welcome to the show, Aaron. How's it feel to be interviewed on your own show?
Well, it's only appropriate that it's you that's actually interviewing me, and nice change of pace. So I appreciate it. It's all your idea. So go with it.
All right. So today's subject is really going to be me asking Aaron questions. I know he's provided a lot of basketball coverage over the last few weeks. So I know we've got upcoming podcasts on a variety of subjects, but now that the NCAA tournament has concluded earlier this week, with UConn winning their second consecutive championship over Purdue, I think we learned some things over the course of the tournament. You had provided some coverage, but I guess my first question to you is, do you have any feelings having seen now the Sweet 16, Final Four, and the championship game that would change how you feel Rutgers should be building their roster for next season?
Well, great question. I think that it doesn't change anything, but it reinforces the fact that to make a real run in March in the NCAA tournament, you need to be able to score points. And obviously you have to get stops at certain times, but you know, we saw, you know, Houston as a number one seed, top defensive team in the country. I mean, they won a game scoring 100 points in overtime. You know, Tennessee, another top defensive team, you know, they were scoring in the 80s. So, Rutgers has to build a roster that's balanced. I think, you know, the fact that Steve Peichel is a defensive first coach is an advantage in the sense of he can scheme defense. He can teach defense. He can figure things out based on the roster he has, but you can't teach shooting. You just can't. And I know so many fans, like, it's funny over the years, like all the comments about, you know, why don't they practice free throws and why don't they practice shooting? And it's like, yes, of course they're practicing, but at the same time, you know, shooting an offense, as much as people don't want to admit, a big part of that is talent. And if you don't have offensively skilled players, you have a certain ceiling on the offensive side. So I think we saw the teams that go far, you know, 14 of the Sweet 16 teams that made it were top 14 overall in KenPom. So they and you're top 14 in KenPom because you could play, you're really efficient offensively and defensively. And most of those teams were more efficient on the offensive end than defense. So I think with that in mind, the way they're building the roster, you know, there's a lot of different ways they could go. But I think that, you know, you've seen already with Martini and Acuff, you know, they do certain things really efficiently from the foul line, finishing at the rim, you know, and Martini obviously from behind the arc. So I think that those are priorities. I think the important thing is that it's very clear that Steve Peichel and the coaching staff recognize, you know, to make a real run next year, they're going to have to score 75, 80 points a game on average, I think, especially in March.
So, I mean, you say in March, I guess my next question for you is about just building the roster. And do you think in this day and age that building a roster for non-conference play, Big Ten play, and then the Big Ten tournament and NCAA tournament, do you think that it's important to have that in mind, or it's right now as a type of era in basketball where it's just the same team that you're building for the entirety of the season that's going to succeed?
Yeah, it's a great question. I don't think you should ever just build a roster based on how the Big Ten style of play is. I mean, I've always been pushing for them to be more up-tempo. I think in terms of the athletes they have coming in already, they're going to be able to do that. And I think that style always wins in March, right? And I think you saw Purdue evolve a little bit, even though obviously they had Edie and a lot of things ran through him. they were a little bit of an anomaly in that fact. But at the same time, you know, Illinois, right? They were an example of a team that just run and gun, was able to score at will. Obviously, a lack of, you know, they got shut down by UConn in the end in that historic 30-0 run, which was just wild. But at the same time, I think Illinois is an example of a team that was very stylistically different in the Big Ten, and they finished number two, and they won the Big Ten tournament. So I don't think that, you know, having to play a certain style is going to, you know, hinder you in conference play. But I think in terms of March and winning in the postseason, it's all about guard play. You have to be versatile. You have to have, you know, an ability to create offense. And Rutgers just did not have that at all. And I also think also stylistically, if you look at Alabama, if you look at Indiana State, the way that they have kind of evolved analytically in focusing on three-point shots and shots at the rim. Both of those teams take almost no shots from mid-range, more than 5 feet out of the away from the basket or inside the arc. So I would like to see more of that too. That's something that hasn't really happened in the Big Ten, but I think that ultimately in the next 5 years, college basketball-wise, I think you're going to see more of a shift in that regard, and I would love to see Rutgers kind of implement that more so coming into this next year.
Sure. Now, maybe it's the nostalgia in me because of when Rutgers participated in the conference, but I always felt that the reason that the Big East overperformed in the late 90s and early 2000s was because you had such a diversity of style of the teams. You had Syracuse, who was known for their 2-3 zone, which allowed them offensively to have your, you know, your Imam Shumpert types, your Carmelo Anthony types, because defensively they were not as much of a liability. Not like Carmelo's a liability in the college level, but he was able to just play on the backside of the defense. Whereas UConn kind of went with the, hey, we're going to go with all, not even 3-and-D at the time. It was just big guys who play defense, and then we'll have one or two shooters. And if we've got a guy like Ray Allen or Rip Hamilton, we're going to run 50,000 screens for this guy. And so I think that the Big East, personally, I think that they overperformed in March because teams were tested against a variety of different styles. Do you think that that's one of the reasons the Big East has had success lately? Or do you think there's another reason why, perhaps NIL related, that the Big East has been so successful, winning four of the last eight national titles?
Yeah, that's an amazing question. And I think that talking about styles, that's another thing just in terms of preparing, is the non-conference schedule and playing different types of styles. I think it's definitely essential. And I think that's what, like, this before I get to the old Big East, like UConn this year, right? Like, they only shot 30% from three in the NCAA tournament, and nobody came close to them. That's not really something you can model. That just shows how dominant they were in every other area, you know, and throughout the Big East modern right now. You know, I think those teams all the best teams in the Big East can win different ways. They can muck it up and they can play low scoring. They can also score a ton. So I think the versatility of that is really important. And in the old Big East, yeah, I mean, first of all, the talent level was just so high. You had some of the greatest coaches in the sports ever seen. So I think that that was a big part of it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it was always with so many teams in the Big East. There was a lot of different styles. You know, of course, you had Syracuse made famous by the zone. You know, UConn, just with how big and athletic they were, you know, Georgetown was a more traditional team with you know, the bigs. So, you know, it's a lot of different styles. But I think that ultimately, yeah, the Big East was, as much as the Big East is like a gauntlet now, it was even more so back then. And I know we're always sentimental for the past and like it's easier to be biased that way. But, you know, if you look back at the Big East back in the, you know, early 2000s, 90s, I mean, some of the crazy gauntlet to get through. And I think that the Rutgers struggles back then, it wasn't even as much as, you know, they never had enough talent, but there were some pretty solid teams that I think a lot of us remember and were fond of that just, you know, went up against just tremendous competition that if they were in another league or, you know, even, you know, comparatively to now, I think they would have, you know, had some NCAA tournament appearances, but the Big East was just so difficult back then. So I think it's really interesting, but I think always very competition is important because, you know, it is so much style driven in the NCAA tournament in terms of your not just seeding, but really matchups. And seeding, it really goes out the window. It's much more about how you match up to other teams. So the more you can see of that early on, I think especially for Rutgers being a young team, The more that they could see different styles early on is really, I think, would benefit them down the road.
All right, so two follow-up questions then about that. So first, I guess I'll just give an example using a player who's near and dear to probably both of our hearts, Jeff Billett. So Jeff Billett was a good player for Rutgers in the late 90s. His senior year, Rutgers fell basically one game short of reaching the NCAA tournament, but he was only about 6 feet tall. He was more of a combo guard, not a pure point guard. So I guess my question for you, I mean, I believe you just reported that Clark Slackert, who was one of the Rutgers targets, had committed to USC, kind of in a similar mold. But I guess my question to you, first question to you is, do you see a place for a guard like that on this team? And if you did get a combo guard who was on the smaller side, but really an elite shooter, do you think that that would compromise the rotations or the roster, particularly the role of someone like Jermichael Davis, to have two guys who are that small, both trying to get minutes on the club?
Yeah, I think, first of all, if Billett was available in the transfer portal right now, I think he would be very desirable because he, you know, create offense. He was a very good 3-point shooter. He was, you know, a good passer. He could run the offense in terms of being a combo guard, but he could do both. But I think specifically to this Rutgers team, yeah, I mean, I think you're seeing the way Rutgers is recruiting too. I don't think that they're going to go smaller than a guard that of Jermichael Davis right now. He's at 6'2". He's kind of slight. Hopefully he can bulk up a little bit. But I don't think that, you know, in this past year, they had three guards that were kind of on the smaller side. I think they kind of have learned from that. So I do think that anyone they add moving forward is going to be a bigger combo guard. You know, they have the guy from Merrimack, Durkak, set to visit soon. He's 6'5". He's the Northeast Conference Player of the Year, Merrimack Defensive Player of the Year. Kind of a, you know, could be a potential glue guy, does a lot of things well. But I think that that's what they're targeting right now. Whether it's a 3-and-D, you know, a combo guard or wing, I think they're going bigger. But in terms of like just general value, you know, out there in college basketball, I think Billett would absolutely be valuable to a lot of teams. But I do think that, you know, there's a kind of a quota in terms of how many small guards you want to have based on the league you play in.
Gotcha. So let's flip it to the other side about playing the five position. So I'll go out there on a limb and say, I think Cliff O'Marie is a very, very good rim defender, but he absolutely was not the best rim defender I've seen at Rutgers. I know the old timers would even throw in the young James Bailey. I mean, some people might remember him at the end of his NBA career, but a young James Bailey or a Roy Hinson being as good a shot blockers, if not better. We've seen Hamid Anjai recently. I don't want to take away what Cliff was doing, but I'm sure if those guys were hitting the transfer portal, they'd also be looking at 7-figure payouts. So at the center position, I guess it's a 2-part question. One, if you could get a center who can't really shoot at all, do you think that you can get by with that if you have four other guys who can shoot, namely with this Rutgers team having like a Jeremiah Williams having to take, you know, be more successful shooting? And then the second part of that would be, do you think it would be equally effective to just kind of go roll with a Martini type as a stretch five, maybe bring in someone else for that role and really just get a guy who's more of a face-up offensive player and then just deal with your lumps on defense? Obviously, they probably would want to get one of each if they could. But do you think that there's an advantage to either one of those two, either in terms of supply or either in terms of how they might fit with the current Rutgers personnel that still has three open scholarships?
Yeah, so in terms of Cliff, I mean, you see the value he has on the market. Quality high-end big men right now that are commanding a lot of attention and NIL. But again, the NIL is such a wild card in terms of no one really knows what anyone's worth. No one really knows what anyone's getting, right? But all these, a lot of the top big men on the market, and not even like Amari Williams isn't even ranked in the top 10 for on three for best fives available. And he's reportedly asking for over $500,000. So the market is insane for big men right now, and good for Cliff for, you know, trying to take advantage of that, which, you know, he's getting a Rutgers degree. I think it's funny too, because, you know, like obviously he has offensive limitations, but it, you know, it's not like teams are going to expect him to all of a sudden turn into Tim Duncan. They know what he is, but that's how valuable he is as a rim defender. If Rutgers thought they could come close to what he could get on the open market NIL wise, you know, I have no doubt that they would have tried to keep him. I mean, they did, but you know, it's just, listen, he can go out there and get a lot more on the open market. And I think from Rutgers' perspective, how do they decide? It's going to, I've been saying, I think it's a little bit of a wait and see, because you can't just, it's not good value, right? For anybody. Like, I think that's why you see a lot of these guys still available. None of the blue bloods per se, or, you know, the top 20 programs we know that have $3-4 million or reportedly have $3-4 million in NIL. No one's nabbed the center yet, right? They're all kind of feeling it out, because if you blow $1 million on a center, like there's not many programs that can do that. So after maybe like four or five, right, or the your 6 to 15 best big men, you know, they might be wanting $750,000 to $1 million, but there might not be any program that can afford that. So it's just bad business, I think, right now to nab a top center, unless you have an endless cash flow like Calipari will have at Arkansas and maybe a handful of other schools. You know, Hunter Dickinson reportedly getting over $1 million last year. But there's just not a lot of schools that can pay that. So a lot of it right now is kind of a chess match in terms of players and agents putting crazy numbers out there. But, you know, listen, I think Cliff, you know, is a top 10 big man for sure, probably top five, even if he has offensive limitations. But that's going back to your question. I think Cliff would be ideal for this team, because as long as you have a guy that can finish at the rim, whether it be off offensive rebounds or, you know, alley-oops, you know, effective off ball screens, rolling to the rim, he's good at that. So I kind of feel like that's, in terms of an offensive center, if they get anything more than that, it's kind of a bonus, where I think they really do have to get someone that can be a presence defensively, you know, as a rim defender, creating, you know, havoc inside, disrupting shots, but also a big-time rebounder, because that's one thing we haven't really talked about is the current roster as such. They don't have a lot of presence on the glass in terms of proven rebounders. And, you know, in terms of who they bring in, I think that's going to be important. So if you're looking for a straight, you know, defensive first, rebounding first center, I think there's going to be some pretty quality options out there at a much lower cost than what's there. Going back to your historical question, yeah, like how many NGI for me? Is the best rim defender I've ever seen at Rutgers. I mean, he averaged almost 5 blocks a game in, you know, the 2010 Big East, which was just loaded with pros and so many good teams and good players. So he was just at a different level, you know, and I thought Cliff, you know, like when he was on, he was as good as that, but, you know, no disrespect, but there were many, I shouldn't say many, there were enough games this year where you felt like he didn't have that same swagger and he didn't have that same presence defensively that he, you know, had even the year before. So from a consistency perspective, you know, Hamidi was to me the best by far in terms of a rim defender. I think Cliff, you know, certainly probably number two in terms of my lifetime. And he's up there for sure in terms of what's out there on the market. And it shows how much teams value that. But I think for what he's commanding, I think value-wise, it makes sense to wait on a center. And I've gotten requests, you know, people saying, oh, is Cliff going to come back? I would not expect that at all unless something wildly changes. But yeah, I think from Rutgers' perspective, roster flexibility, they have that. They got, you know, Martini, which is really important piece, I think, that gives them kind of an ability to adjust now. And then obviously Acuff, a proven scorer, who I do think is going to be more efficient at Rutgers now. So yeah, I think Pikel's going to, I think they're going to want to use their athleticism. They're going to want to run. I think they're going to be able to press a lot more. But you have to have a rim defender at the back end to do that. So if you don't have a defensive five, you're not, you know, it's going to hurt the press at times. But I think, yes, if they bring in a four that can, you know, kind of play the four and the five, I think another piece of it is Lathan Somerville. And, you know, I think they think that he can contribute right away. So maybe you don't get a true starter, right? You get a guy that maybe will start right away that you hope maybe over time Lathan Somerville can beat out as the year goes on, or just a straight platoon between those two guys. I do think you can win with a 6'8", 6'9", you know, physical four that can play the five. We've, you know, Ohio State in the past when they were, you know, pretty good, they played that way. You know, Michigan, I mean, they had, you know, the Wagner brothers, right, who were like 6'10", 6'11", but they were like, you know, 200 plus pounds, you know, soaking wet. They weren't physical big centers. So I think it's style, it's physicality, it's mentality, as much as it is, you know, 7 foot versus 6'9". So I think it really depends. But I think that there's more options also right now in terms of guys that could play the 4 and 5 that Rutgers could kind of, you know, have some flexibility in how they move forward and make decisions.
Gotcha. Well, in terms of making those decisions, I mean, you mentioned pressing more. There are kind of two schools of thought. I mean, you see this in football where they say, do you want your backup quarterback, for example, stylistically to be the same as your starter? Or do you think it's better to have like the opposite so that the other teams like would have to adjust if they had to come into the game? So I guess how that translates to basketball is, do you see a scenario next season where Rutgers almost has a, quote, pressing lineup, where, you know, you have your J-Mac type guy in there? It doesn't, like, Lathan Somerville's not going to be in that team. But, you know, you're going to have Ace Bailey or Harper who may be able to play in that. Jeremiah may be a good fit because they might have some versatile players. Do you see kind of Pikel trying to, even if he can't crank up the defense the way he's wanted to in the past for the whole game, do you see a scenario where he has almost like a pressing unit that he's trying to just change the pace on coming up next season?
Yeah, I totally do. And I think that that's part of his selling point with portal guys is that, you know, like people forget, like everybody says, oh, you know, why aren't all these big stars want to play with Dylan and Ace? And it's, yes, a lot of players do, but at the same time, like you have to get guys that are going to play roles also, you know, and there's certain guys that, listen, they're going to see Ace and Dylan. They're not going to want to play there because they're going to say, okay, well, I'm not going to get the shots that I want to with those guys there. So I think that he's selling playing time. I think he's, you know, I think it's definitely as the season starts, you know, they're going to try to be aggressive. They're going to get as many guys minutes as they can. They're going to press a lot. And I think just the up and down nature, fast pace, you know, if you see the best teams in March, I mean, they play at a relentless pace. I mean, UConn was just, you know, didn't mean they were up and down the floor transition all the time, but they were just so relentless in how hard they played. And they were able to play multiple ways in terms of the pace. So I think that they need to be able to do that. And I think part of that is getting players that can handle that both athletically and also just skill-wise. And I think that, yeah, with Dylan Harper, his decision-making, his size, he's going to be a real problem in transition with teams trying to slow him down. And then Ace Bailey, you know, on one wing, I think Jeremiah will be really good in transition. He was at times. I mean, the thing about Rutgers last year is they were actually pretty good in transition. They, in terms of being able to do it, they just couldn't finish. So I think that's why you see guys like Acuff who can finish at the rim. That's the idea, is to get these guys, you know, opportunities to score. Rutgers got no easy baskets that last year. And if you're going to score 80 points a game, you have to be able to get some easy baskets in transition. So I think off of turnovers, you know, there's going to be some chaos. You know, they like putting a four at the front of the press. I think with big guards, you know, they're going to be a matchup nightmare. And they're going to be able to trap a lot defensively. So I think they're going to be very aggressive. And especially if he feels like they're not as good in the half court, you know, they can use their athleticism and size in the press. That's going to create problems and speed other teams up in a way that you can't necessarily do when you sit back in the style of, you know, let them walk it up the floor, camp in the half court, you know, and play a 60, 65 point game. I think he's going to want to speed things up and utilize their strengths, which is going to be athleticism and just, you know, raw talent in terms of their ability to fly.
Gotcha. So I guess then that kind of, I guess when I'm looking at this, yeah, I mean, clearly there's minutes to be had at the 5 spot. I guess my question to you again, and you mentioned this in the, I think it was today's podcast, was about, you know, preseason expectations and making all these guesses and how, you know, obviously it's premature, but it's fun and people care about it. So we got to, you know, jump on the bandwagon there. But what percentage of Ace Bailey's minutes next year do you think he's going to be at the 5? And what percentage of his minutes do you think is going to be at the 4? Or do you think that they're going to figure out a way that he's going to be playing a lot of 3?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they're going to really space it out. I think that that's what you see, like with a guy like Martini that could take his guy off. I think they definitely have the ability already to to play small ball. And I don't think you'll see Ace at the five, though. I think he'll be more of a three and four. And it's really I think it's going to be more like having multiple threes out there versus him necessarily playing the four. Now that begs the question defensively and matchups and, you know, how do they adjust in Big Ten play in terms of him defending a four? But, you know, he is a pretty good rim defender at the high school and AAU level. He's obviously going to have to, you know, add some muscle a little bit, but he can, you know, he has very good instincts defensively in terms of like a star player. I think he's actually, you know, I don't know if I would say ahead, but he's in a really good position coming in on a defensive level in terms of his understanding and the way he plays and has kind of natural instincts in defending the rim. So I think he can defend fours. I think he will play, you know, if you look at, I think it's very possible they're going to start three true guards, and that's why they're going to get some bigger guards. And that's why, you know, Acuff is he's 6'4". You know, like if Durkak, for example, is 6'5", you know, I Alaco was 6'4". Like they're looking at, I think, to start a third guard that's big. Jeremiah Williams is 6'4". Dylan's 6'5", 6'6". So I think they want big guards that they can play three of at a time for the most part. You know, Ace would be that four. And then you rotate that five in multiple different ways. So I think rotational flexibility is really important. And I think that that's how you see how they're building the roster. So, you know, I guess in theory, Ace could be considered the five at times, but I don't know. You know, it's all going to depend on his development. But I think the biggest thing is that they're going to want him more at the wing and on the perimeter from an offensive perspective in terms of how dangerous he is and how difficult he's going to be to defend.
For sure. So, yeah, I mean, I think also back on the pressing topic, you really don't know what you're going to get from Dylan Grant. Obviously, with him not playing this year, really, if he had played, perhaps there was an avenue where he's your, you know, your front of the press guy if you're really trying to muck it up. But we really don't know what we're going to get from him. I'm not sure about Dortch in that role, perhaps 2 years down the line. But for the interim, you know, that might be challenging, let's say. So moving just completely to, you know, another topic about those, the role players with efficiency. So we're talking about the guy from Merrimack, for example. Do you see a scenario where there's any other players that you really have seen coming in the transfer portal that you are there? I guess maybe it's better than asking it that way. Are there certain metrics people should be looking at to believe as to a player may be more efficient in less minutes or less shots, like we're talking about with Acuff, where, you know, I guess in his case, it's fairly easy to look at his split from last year when he was the big scorer on his team compared to 2 years ago where he was being able to shoot a higher percentage and take higher quality looks. But not everybody has such an easy delimiter between that. Are there any metrics that you're looking at that other fans might behoove them to look at to believe that a player is going to be more efficient with the role that he's going to come into Rutgers with?
Yeah, I think you look at the strengths of the players they're bringing in, right? So like Acuff finished, he was around 65% at the rim. He finished, right? So that's something we know Rutgers really struggled with. You know, he averaged 19 shots a game at Eastern Michigan. That's not going to be his role at Rutgers. He has a really low turnover rate. He's an 80%+ free throw shooter, and he scores 66% on layups. So those three things are certainly things that Rutgers is going to want to, you know, take advantage of and utilize his strengths on. I think I shouldn't say perfect example because this is a high-end example, but someone that people should look at as someone that had a high usage rate, a lower efficiency at a lower level was Tristan Newton for UConn. You know, he was at East Carolina. He had a ton of usage. He was like their main star, right? And then at UConn, you know, he changed his game a little bit. He was not taking as many shots, and he kind of developed into a player that was just really efficient at two or three things that he did super well. You know, he's a spot up three guy. He was able to get to the rim at relative ease, and he focused on getting to the rim and taking threes. And that was, very much like at, you know, these bad teams, you're pretty much doing it all. So I think the fact that, you know, even Acuff, maybe his efficiency wasn't super high. It actually wasn't terrible considering the role that he had. And the fact that, you know, when he had a role at Duquesne, right, as a sophomore, he shot 39% from three. And even as a high usage, that's that first year at Eastern Michigan, he shot 35% from three. So I think in terms of what they're going to ask him to do, he has experience. He's a proven scorer. But I think that they're going to ask him to score in two or three specific ways that are his strengths. He's not going to be forced to, you know, have an 18-foot contested, you know, step back with the shot clock winding down. That's not, you know, because he has no other talent on the offense with him. So I think that that's a big part of it in terms of, you know, Martini. That's why he's so important, I think, because he's really good at spot up threes. And you have to imagine that with the guys they have that can penetrate, with Harper, with Williams, with Ace, is that, you know, you're going to have defenses that are going to have to sag, and you're going to have guys like Martini that get open looks from three, and you have to have guys that can knock those down. So, you know, all the talk, I laugh when people say, you know, Pikel hates KenPom and analytics, and I really do think that that's for show sometimes. And if you look at how they're recruiting guys, I mean, they're very much paying attention to analytics, and they're getting guys that can help in very specific ways. And I think Dirkac, you know, not a perfect player by any means, but he does a lot of things well. And I think one thing you look at is they're going after guys with low turnover rates, guys that are pretty good passers that can also make certain shots either at the rim or behind the arc. So, you know, I think the concern is that adding Dirkac with Williams and Acuff is that you don't have a guy that's really a drop dead 3-point shooter. That's fair. I think ideally you want to get a 3-and-D guy, but as you said, there's three spots available. So they might add a combo guard. They might add a 3-and-D wing plus that big man. So it all depends, but it's going to be fascinating to watch and see how they ultimately land on guys. And, you know, whoever they get next is going to impact who they get next after that in terms of just makeup and role. But I think that, you know, the idea that they're getting guys maybe at a lower level that weren't as efficient, I think as long as they envision them playing a certain role and a specific role that cater to their strengths, that's the most important part. And that's why it's hard to translate. You know, it's not easy to look at on paper and see, hey, how is that going to work out? But I think that that's what I'm looking at in terms of analytics.
All right, last question. This is related to defense analytics, I guess. But for those who were watching the national championship game or even just checking on your phone, I think the most telling statistic was that 5 minutes into the second half, Purdue had only attempted 5 3-pointers. And at that point, they were 1 for 5. So part of that was UConn knowing how to play proper defense. Part of it was that they do also themselves have a guy who's listed at 7'2". So that kind of makes it less required that they need to double team. But do you see defensively, I think Rutgers, you know, statistically has had a good defense the last 2 years, even though I think part of that is because teams are maybe holding the ball late or, you know, pace and things like that. But do you think that Rutgers is going to be better defensively in this upcoming season than they were this year, even if the metrics don't show it, because perhaps just a lot more being shots are taken by both squads? Or do you think that defense, we're just going to have to, that's just a thing of the past in terms of how good Rutgers defense is going to be in the upcoming years?
No, yeah, I think they can be really good defensively because I think they're going to have size and athleticism. And again, it goes back to Pikel being able to teach scheme. I think with UConn, the one thing, I mean, Klingon is probably the best defensive big man in college basketball in several years. So that he's a special defensive player. I think the stat was he had given up 4 post-up baskets for the entire season going into that game. It was 5, and he gave up 4 to Edie right away. But over time in that game, he completely wore Edie out. Edie was 6 of 16, I saw, with Klingon one-on-one in the post. So I think, you know, in terms of how Rutgers defends, you know, traditionally they tend to jump to the ball when a big man has it, and they take their chances on the perimeter. The thing that UConn did in that game is they were just not going to give up threes. So they just didn't help at all. And I don't think you can always do that. And, you know, that's why like a guy like Mag was so good at Rutgers, because he had the smarts and the ability to know the right time to make those moves and to jump to the ball and to help side and all that. So those are concepts that are going to have to be taught. But I do think, you know, in terms of the length they're going to have, I mean, if you play 3 guards, right, and you're playing and they're all 6'4 or above, you're going to be able to jump passing lanes. You're going to be able to disrupt shots. You're going to be able to make it difficult for other backcourts, you know, even from a vision perspective, you know. And then when, you know, Ace Bailey is your 4 or 3, you know, jumping out on the perimeter and getting a hand in face, they're going to have to be fundamentally sound. but I think that they're going to have the makeup and the versatility. Because the other thing too is how he's targeting guys. He's got, when you get guys with size, they're going to be able to defend multiple positions. So I think that that's really key as well. So I think, yeah, I think they could be really good defensively. But you have to focus. I think you have to prioritize on the offense, but then you're getting guys that you know can fit into your scheme because they have size, they have athleticism, and they can defend multiple ways. And I do think that the press is going to be part of that. But I think that, yeah, the ball pressure is going to be, a big part of what they do as always. But it's going to be a learning process. I think they're definitely a team that will be better defensively, in February and March, or at least we hope, versus what they'll be in November and December.
For sure. And definitely something I think probably fans and maybe even the coaching staff didn't appreciate was how effective they were at defense during those NCAA tournament years, because just of the length of your 2 through 4, sometimes 1 through 4 that you had marching out there on the court. So excellent content as always, Aaron. I can speak for all the listeners, and even when I'm not on the podcast, I listen to it. Any closing thoughts before we sign off for our listeners today?
Well, thanks for doing this. I appreciate it. And, you're my go-to football guy, and we'll do that again soon. But just one point you just mentioned about those teams with Gio and Ron, everybody forgets, Ron was the 4 on those teams, and he was, calling him 6'6" was, very liberal. Because when he, measured up at the combine, he was 6'4.5" without shoes on. So they were very successful, with him at the 4. So the idea that, it would be a concern, obviously you had Miles Johnson and Cliff as the 5, and that's important, right? But at the same time, Zach Martini, he gave Cliff trouble in that game. Like, he could play the 4. He could play a little bit of small ball 5, depending on who else they add. Somerville, he's going to be a load at 6'9", and, his size. So I think, again, there's a lot of different ways they can go with this. And, those teams you mentioned that were really good for Rutgers, they were not nearly as efficient offensively. So if you can just even come close on a defensive level, if you could be, a slightly above average defensive team, you don't have to be an elite defensive team, but if you could be, a top 30 offensive team, and be above average defense, they're going to have the potential to be really, really good. And I think that's the balance that I hope, at least, that they're trying to achieve next season. But thank you so much for doing this, and always appreciate your insight and everything.
Well, thanks everybody for tuning in. Again, if you're watching on YouTube, give us a like, hit the subscribe button, helps other fans. Now, not just Rutgers fans, we're going to have some national fans of the show, as well as leave comments and feedback so Aaron can help improve his content moving forward. That's going to do it for another edition of the Scarlet Faithful Podcast. For me, David Anderson, and my guest, Aaron Brightman, have a great rest of your day and a great weekend.